We welcome you back into Bullseye on the Afternoon on AM 930 WEOL and 100.3 FM. Andy Bulbarch and Matt Douglas with you. Time now for our Budweiser's From the Sidelines segment presented by North Ridgeville Convenient Sunoco on Center Ridge and Barton Roads. And we welcome in Fox 8's very own John Telich. JT, a pleasure as always, my friend. How are you?
Top of the Wednesday to you, and hope all is well. Looking forward to seeing how the Browns react and respond to all the crazy stuff that happened at the end of that game.
Yeah, boy, what a wild finish to what was otherwise a pretty successful night for the Cleveland Browns, and they've got 10 days to try and recoup. But let's begin with the melee at the end of the game, JT. I mean, the fallout from all of this, Myles Garrett, barring the results of the appeal process, is going to miss at the very least the rest of the regular season. You know, you were there for all this last Thursday. Your thoughts on all that went down in the final 8 seconds of the game?
Well, it was absolutely incredible that it got to a point where the Browns literally dominated the Pittsburgh Steelers on that night, and they played very, very well. And for it to come to the point where the skirmish happens between those two guys and it escalated and then re-escalated, just you've got to play with emotion, but you have to play with control. And I'll tell you what, Bull, I mean, initially, and this was the scenario for us at Fox 8. The game was on Fox 8. I had to be on the air in the studio right after the game with highlights of it. And you can imagine everything is prepared with about, you know, 4 minutes to go in the game. I've given the editors the final highlights. I've written all my, you know, notes that I'm going to use for each highlight, and then we were just going to then get, you know, the interviews from the stadium and turn those around and have them on the air. And then within the span of those last 8 seconds, the entire tenor of the show, the broadcast, the approach to the football game changed. All the other stuff, the fact that they played well, the fact that they picked off the quarterback 4 times, the fact that Chubb goes over 1,000, the fact that Kareem still gets is continuing to be used in a pretty good manner. All those things, they went right out the window, and it was exceptionally unfortunate. And initially, I mean, I don't condone what Myles did. What he did, and we all saw it. There's no hiding from it. He's in New York having his appeal done, and he is not shying away from taking the responsibility. He told our PJ Ziegler after the game in the locker room, same thing for Larry Ogunjobi. They did what they did. They are taking responsibility for it. And so all of those factors weighed into the fact that you know, and many of the players said it felt like they lost the game. And so it will be very interesting to see how this franchise, how this team, how they react to this kind of controversy. And, you know, I don't know how they're going to react, because this is somewhat unprecedented. And so initially when I was on the air, I was exceptionally hard on Myles because it had just happened. And how could you do such a thing? What were you thinking? Well, you basically weren't thinking. You blacked out. You went crazy. And, you know, initially you just didn't get the feedback until time wore on that Mason Rudolph played a part in getting this to the point where he swung the helmet at him. So it was just bizarre, wild, and initially, you know, the reactions were liquid hot from all over the NFL landscape, from all over the media here in town, from fans, Steeler fans, Browns fans, and it will be very interesting a week from Sunday to see what happens at Heinz Field.
You had alluded to the responses and the reactions from all across the NFL. Let's talk about the reaction and the response from Mike Tomlin as well on Tuesday, because it's hard to hate what Mike Tomlin does and has done with that franchise. Your thoughts on Mike Tomlin's response?
Yeah, he said that the Steelers did play a part in this. I mean, he made a broad statement. He did about 14, 15-minute news conference. I listened to or I mean, I watched it all because we got the feed from Pittsburgh, and I listened to him break down the entire game and say that, you know, this does not take away from the fact that we, and he's speaking for the Steelers, were outplayed. The Browns played well in many areas. Baker was better at this. Chubb went over 1,000 yards. All these things happened, but getting back to the incident itself, he said they did take their role or their responsibility in it. But then later on, he was pressed, what can you learn from it? And he answered it, you can't learn anything from it. Then they let it die. They continued to ask him questions about other things, what have you. Then the last question at the news conference was another way of asking him that same question. How do you react to it? And he said, there's nothing that you can learn from this. And then he said that he didn't believe, you know, what they did was the reason for the thing to happen. So it sounded like he placed all of the blame, all of the responsibility for this thing, this happening, squarely on the shoulders of Myles Garrett. He didn't say Freddie Kitchens condoned this or Freddie Kitchens has an atmosphere of, you know, helmets swinging football players in Cleveland. He just said that you can't learn anything from it. And in some ways, Bull, I agree with that. What's to be learned other than you don't do that sort of thing? You know, I think we can all agree that you just don't pick up someone else's helmet or rip it off their head and use it as a weapon. But he sounded in some ways, if I can take us back to the Iraq War, he sounded like Baghdad Bob. You know, it's like everything's cool here in Pittsburgh. Nothing wrong, nothing to see here. We had nothing to do with this. You know, you better go ask those people over there, what do you learn from this situation? It sounded kind of odd because I've always respected Mike because he's a blunt kind of a guy, and if he doesn't have anything to say about a subject, he will just say, I'm not talking about it, and move on. But that was kind of curious to hear, and so it's just, we did a story last night on Fox 8 about the fans, you know, getting ready to go to Pittsburgh in 9-10 days and to support the Browns at Heinz Field. So I don't think it's going to be a fun atmosphere there in Pittsburgh in a week or so.
No, and it'll be another tough matchup, no question about that. And, you know, we know now that Myles Garrett will not be a part of that game. Olivier Vernon, we're not sure if he'll be a part of that also as he tries to come back from injury. And, you know, you wonder what this defense will look like, whether they're going to have Vernon or not. I mean, Joe Schobert has played very, very well. I mean, it seems like he's having a Pro Bowl-type season, so the Browns certainly have that going for them. But how do you think all of this affects the defense moving forward?
Yeah, it really does. Someone made, I was listening, I believe it was Jake Burns, who does a nice job of breaking down the Browns, kind of like on the All-22, does stuff for the Browns and Orange Report and did stuff previously for Cleveland.com. I thought he was opining about, you know, you could use Sheldon Richardson on the outside occasionally. And then use some of those other, you'll have Chad Thomas getting snaps on the outside. If Vernon comes back, you're in a better place. But as we stand right here, the first day of official practice on a work week for an opponent, you can't say definitively that Vernon's playing or Vernon is not. You're still in that murky area. And so, you know, they're going to have to, you know, be a little more creative, I think, Bull, in how they bring people to give some pressure towards the quarterback. Whereas in the past, you could just have a couple guys worried about Myles Garrett, Vernon on the other side, or in the case of this past game, Chad Thomas, who got a lot of snaps. They're going to have to bring pressure and get it in different ways. Their defensive backfield is altered somewhat with Morgan Burnett gone for the year with the Achilles, Demarius Randall coming back after the ejection on Thursday night for using his helmet as a weapon. And so there's going to have to be a lot more synchronization from the back end of the defense through Schobert to the defensive line in order for them to play well. This is where If you have any stock in what Steve Wilks is trying to do as a defensive coordinator, this is a test for him, and we'll see how coordinated he can be. But you mentioned Schobert. He had a tremendous game the other night, and certainly is raising his Pro Bowl stock this year, no doubt.
No question about that. Again, we're being joined by Fox 8's very own John Telich on our Budweiser's From the Sideline segment presented by North Ridgeville Convenience Sunoco. All right, JT, we've talked a lot about the defensive side of things. Let's go to the other side of the ball. Baker Mayfield certainly has been a lot better the last couple of weeks, looking a little bit more like the quarterback that he was a year ago.
Yeah.
This is the kind of defense that you'd like to think the Browns should be able to have some fun with.
It sure is. I mean, here's some of the point totals, Bull, that Miami has given up this year. I'm just throwing them out. They're arbitrary numbers, but they all have one thing in common. They're very high. 59, 43, 31, 30, 27, 26, 31, 37. These are all point totals from some of the games that their defense has. I think there's one where they allowed only in the teens, but you get the picture. They can be scored upon. And they have their own controversy with this Walton guy who had a situation with his pregnant girlfriend. So they're in a whole mess down there in that respect. But they can be scored on. Getting back to Baker. Baker was more decisive. Baker was more accurate. Baker knew where he was going with the football. His eyes drifted across the various options that he had for his receivers, and he made good throws. He made a great throw to Hodge down there that turned into about a 40-yard play, may have been even more, but Hodge was kind of touched on his legs when he was down on the ground. That was a great throw that Baker made. The throw to the outside shoulder of Kareem Hunt, who made a fantastic catch, that was another thing. Baker had a great spidey sense to him in the amongst the fray, where they didn't want him to escape to his right, you know, in order to throw on the run, but he still found a way to and then make a pretty good decision and make a good throw. So I thought it was a good night for him. I mean, if you take away that the deep ball that, you know, went down to the 1-inch line for OBJ, he basically threw 3 touchdown passes on the night, actually 2 official, but 3 touchdown passes. And I think the fact that he made that throw and then Carlson, in the back of the end zone, made a tremendous catch. That kid from Princeton, the tight end, what do they say on ESPN? You got mossed. Well, he mossed his guy pretty good and making the catch over the defender. But that was classic Baker. You know, confident, making the throw. Earlier in the year, that throw, if you recall, maybe 3 games in, that got tipped and that got picked off. And then that kind of throw that he made the other night, a great catch was made by his tight end. So I think his confidence is rubbing off. Guys are making plays for him. And then you still have, you know, you have that constant in the middle of that offense in a 1,000-yard rusher in Nick Chubb, who really earned his 92 yards on 27 carries and said nothing about it. Got up after each play and just played football. And that's the kind of guy that you got to hang your proverbial culture hat on, a guy like Nick Chubb.
Let's spend some more time on that backfield, JT, because I know that the addition of Kareem Hunt, you alluded to that last week, talking about just how big of an impact he made on last week's game. And, you know, you saw a lot of the same things on Thursday night against the Steelers, and this looks like a real nice 1-2 punch. So far, so good, and it seems like they should be able to have a lot of room to run and a lot of success against the Dolphins on Sunday.
I absolutely agree with you, Bull, and I think what they did against the Steelers, by virtue, they didn't have them lined up together that much. It was somewhat infrequent. Sometimes Kareem was outside, whatever. Kareem had, I think, 10 or 11 touches when you combine his runs and his pass receptions. I think he had the most receptions of any of the guys on the Browns. And so with those guys on the field, a great deal of respect for both players' abilities to make a play. And so I think that somewhat, especially they ran 27 times with Chubb, that somewhat negated the impact that we spoke about that was a possibility last Wednesday of T.J. Watt just coming into Cleveland and just, you know, taking a ton of detonating your offensive plan. He was not able to do that, and I think a lot of it was because you have those 2 weapons to worry about, sometimes in on the same play, both respected. I know Kareem is exceptionally respected for his ability to make plays in the flat or to be on a short reception and turn something, break a tackle or two. And so, man, I think the guys in the offensive room have got to be salivating at the possibilities of what this could become. And I don't even want to talk about beyond this year. There's still a lot of potential for what they can do just in the next six games to make it more of an enticing offensive package. It was more fun to watch them on offense on Thursday night. And they really, you know, they really played more crisply. Baker was not in trouble that often. And it was impressive. But I think a lot of it goes back to they've had two very good offensive games where they've looked better. And, oh, coincidence or not, Kareem Hunt has been on the football field for, you know, a good chunk of some of those offensive series.
Yeah, no question. Cannot debate the positive impact that he's had on that offense since being reinstated a couple weeks back. All right, JT, we've got another full weekend of football coming our way from the high school side of things as well. We've got games on Friday night that should be really entertaining with the regional finals taking place. Menor, St. Ed's, Avon Lake. We've got some really good ones coming up this Friday.
We really do. I will be at the Mentor St. Edward game, and I think I've been saying it here the last few weeks that's really going to be the true championship game in Division I in the state of Ohio, in my estimation. So, you know, Mentor trying to win a state title for the first time for Coach Triv, who's in his last year, and then St. Edward, who's tasted success several times, and they are the defending champions, seeing what they can do for Coach Lombardo. That will be fun to watch. Obviously, Avon Lake. I was impressed watching Avon. I was at the Avon Benedictine game at Byers Field last week. That was a fun way to watch what Coach Elder has done. I know he's had some injuries. He just keeps doing a great job coaching his football team, and there they are up against the Shoremen in what will be a great game at North Ridgeville. On Saturday night, I'm curious, Bull, to see how Akron Manchester does against the defending D6 state champion Kirtland Hornets. And, of course, Kirtland and Manchester are up in Division 5 this year. Because you have two teams, Bull, that game's going to last about an hour and a half at top, because I was talking to Tiger Laverty for my podcast on Monday, and I was chatting with him in his coach's office up there in Kirtland, and he said, you know, I have like 125 plays to look at from Coach France in Akron, Manchester, and he said, I think 117 of them were runs. And I said, well, don't you think if they're looking at your film, they would say the same thing? And he said, yeah, I guess so. So that will be literally a tough, gritty, run-right-at-you kind of a game with Manchester and their great history that they have. Coach France, the most decorated, winningest coach in Ohio history, what he's been able to do. They've got the Friday Night Touchdown Player of the Year in Ethan Wright. Kirtland's got a couple of real good backs, and they play tough football. That will be a fun game to watch, and so that's just another one of the things. Of course, Chardon has a big game. There's a lot of games to keep track of. I always love the regional final weekend because it just gives you an opportunity to see, you know, some of the schools like, you know, that were really big in the picture in the first week of the playoffs may have been upset in the second week, and then now you're looking at the regional, you know, the Elite Eight, if you will, who's going to make the Final Four in their divisions. So it's a fun time, and I think this is one of the best weekends of the year that we're going to have in terms of watching football.
Yeah, hard to debate that. There's so much going on Friday, Saturday, and, of course, the Browns on Sunday. JT, yep. As always, my friend, a pleasure catching up, and we look forward to doing this again next week.
All right, you bet, Bull, and I'll talk to you guys next Wednesday. Thanks, man.
Thank you again. That's Fox 8's very own John Telich joining us on the Budweiser's From the Sideline segment presented by North Ridgeville Convenience Sunoco on Center Ridge and Barton Roads. Let's step aside and take a break here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. Matt Douglas and I will come back with more after this here on AM 930 WEOL and 100.3 FM.